Hello and welcome to another episode of The Grey NATO, a loose discussion of travel, adventure, diving, driving, gear, and most certainly watches. This is episode 215, and it's proudly brought to you by the ever-growing TGN supporter crew. We thank you all so much for your continued support, and if you'd like to support the show, please visit thegreynato.com for more details. Jason, how are we doing?
I'm doing just fine. I'm hunkered here at home waiting for a rainy week to start. You're somewhere else again this week. It seems like every time we talk, you're either coming or going or somewhere else.
I think this might be the last that we do in such a fashion, but I am currently live from New York. It's an early morning, and I am in my hotel room before kind of kicking off for a full day of stuff with Hodinkee. So, we did an event with Leica in D.C. on Thursday. I took an Amtrak, my first Amtrak experience, from D.C. to NYC. I was kind of looking forward to that. I don't know if you're an Amtrak guy, Jason, or like it's something that hits your life very often. There's no AC in my car. And if you're from this area, it's weirdly hot right now.
Oh.
And it had to have been 100 degrees Fahrenheit in the car.
Wow.
So first my phone wouldn't charge because it was overheating.
Jeez.
Like it was that hot, ambient. And then if you walked like just to the next car, which was like an eating car, and the one after that is where you actually got the food, it was like maybe 60. I'm trying to do Fahrenheit to help you guys out, but like, but we made it to New York and have been here for a little while. We went to Storm King on the weekend, which was awesome. If you're coming to the New York area and you enjoy art and it looks like it's going to be a good weekend, nice weather.
Yeah.
You can take the train and then you take a shuttle right to Storm King.
Okay. It's an outdoor sculpture garden.
Yeah. We had a nice day. It was very warm, like I mentioned, and it was nice to get out for a walk. And it was had kind of always been on my list since watching, I don't know, Jason, if you got into Master of None, Aziz Ansari's show.
No.
But in the second season of that, he and a friend go to Storm King, and I was kind of like, what is that? And it's nice to kind of check it off the list. I had a good time. Sunday, we hung out with some friends, did a little bit of driving. Now we're into the week, and it's been a mix of dinners and trying to decide what we can film, what we can't, what we've got time to do, what needs to be recorded,
yeah,
meetings that should happen in person for the next, for the rest of the year, that sort of thing. So
wow,
we're doing that. And then we've got a magazine launch party coming up. So this will all be over by the time the episode comes out. But, the new magazine for Hodinkee is out. So they're doing a little event. And since I'm here, I'll go to that and say hi to some folks. And then after that, we've got a Blancpain event on Wednesday night. And for that one, I'm hosting it with a couple folks from the world of ocean conservation and ocean photography. So that should be fun. I'm not sure, if they end up airing it or recording it for YouTube or something. I'll include the show notes in the future. Then we shoot a whole day of video, and I'll go right from that shoot to the airport to come home just in time for Remembrance Day.
Wow. Geez. Straight to airport, as our friend Robert Spangle would say.
STA, for yeah, sure. Right. Yeah, I will start an early day and lug my bags around my broken away suitcase.
Is there ever a trip to New York that's just like sedate and sort of calm and you can take your time with stuff? It feels like, I think because you kind of wait to do so many things when you get there that it just becomes packed. That's how I remember all my trips there. It's like, okay, I haven't been here in like 6 months. I'm just going to pack it full of things.
I feel like back in the day, man, like we used to come to New York and like it was chill. Like we would come for a Bremont thing for 2 nights.
Yeah.
And like we would have time to walk around Soho.
Yeah, that's true.
And go to a couple cool stores. Maybe check out something that we'd always wanted to check out.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I do feel this kind of burden, especially with Hodinkee, footing the bill, of course, like to grind and get as much as we can done. And it's November.
Yeah.
So the more I get done in November, kind of let's be honest, the less I have to do in December, ideally.
Yeah.
And December is a nice month to slow down a bit, right?
Yeah.
So it's a good month to push. And obviously we've been doing a little bit of extra. We just had our collective episode go live.
Yeah, that was a blast. That was so fun.
Yeah, and I've been rambling for a few minutes now. Why don't you explain to people kind of the concept behind these, what we think will be TGN specials moving forward?
Yeah, the concept is that, we have never really been comfortable reading ads during episodes in order to, make a little bit of income from TGN on the side of what we're making from our subscriber base. And with that in mind, we were looking for a way to do some kind of an episode that could be sponsored without feeling like one big long ad read. And the result is, if you listened, what we did this week on Tuesday on November 8th with Collective Horology. And that is, an hour long bonus episode that gets added to our regular feed of podcasts separate from our standard Thursday episodes that are usually around, or they will be around, kind of a themed topic and yeah. done in collaboration with and supported by a partner. And in this case, it was Collectorphorology. They were introducing their new collaboration, the PO3, with Armin Strom. Really cool watch. And it just kind of made sense to do this topic around adventurous-minded high-end watches and do a fun draft. And Asher was kind enough and fun enough to take part in that with us. And I think it came off really well. I hope people really liked it.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see what the feedback is. Obviously, we were very, like, set in our ways about the fact that, like, we've switched to listener supported for the normal episodes.
Yeah.
So if somebody wants to do something, it has to be like extra.
Mm-hmm.
Just like Jason, I'm super happy with how it came out. I'm really excited to see what the feedback is.
Yeah.
What people think of the show, what people think of the idea of, like, hey, a free bonus episode. It's going to have a guest every time. It's going to have some sort of an expert or a different perspective than the normal TGN vibe. So that's live on the feed. I'm guessing most of you at least gave it a shot, obviously. And if you'd like to give us some feedback and let us know, you can either leave a comment on the episode. Comments are open and absolutely encouraged. Or you can send us an email to thegreynado@gmail.com for sure. Jason, what else you've been doing to stay busy?
Yeah, well, a couple things. I mean, very different sorts of things. For one thing, I've been editing my next novel, Sweetwater, which I finished writing a few weeks ago, and I've been working with some friends, contacts who are subject matter experts in various very arcane fields that kind of make up big or small parts mm-hmm. of the plot of the book. And I want to get those details right. So I've sent a few sections out and chapters and things for people to review, and those have come back. So I'm working on editing that. And I guess bigger news is I might've mentioned this before, but I'm working with an agent to hopefully get a publishing deal for this book. So I self-published Depth Charge, but this time around, I'm going to see if I can go the traditional route of publishing, maybe have it see a wider audience. And I'm pretty excited about that. So we'll see where that goes. But in addition to that, I've been, and this is on a very different note, Gashani and I got hooked on this show. And look, we're very late to the game. I think they're 8 seasons in.
Okay.
Have you ever watched Alone?
I mean, back in the day, yeah, when they used to do it on, or it might still be
back in the day.
Like, did they still do it at the top end of Vancouver Island?
Apparently they did like 3 of the first 4 seasons on Vancouver Island, but we got in late.
Okay.
and we have a Netflix subscription, so that's where we started. Netflix only has, as far as I know, season 8. So we just decided, let's give this a try. We watched season 8, which is set on, I think it's called Chilkoot Lake, which is up, it's in British Columbia, kind of on the Pacific coast, but far enough north that they get some, like, seriously, you know, Arctic style weather, along with, you know, on this big, very remote lake. And they take, you know, 10, at least in this case, like, survival experts, like people that have lived off the land and, like, really know how to do a number of very specific kind of Dick Prenicky-esque
right.
tasks, you know, building houses, making tools, uh-huh. you know, snaring animals, fishing. And it's just been a blast. I mean, we kind of binged season 8, which was excellent. Now I think we're going to go back and kind of watch, you know, work our way through the other 7 seasons. But I don't know. It's funny how when I watch shows like this, it almost, like, even though it's at an extreme end of kind of being outdoors, it makes me want to do more outdoors. It makes me want to, like, split wood, build a fire, go camping, go for a hike. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It's a refreshing show because it's like, it certainly fits in the genre of a reality series, but it's not, there's no narrator, no voiceover, no over dramatic editing, you know, to kind of build the hype. It's just, you know, following these 10 people and kind of what they're doing, and they're doing all the filming themselves. And I don't know, it was really kind of a refreshing, kind of fun change of pace from watching, you know, Nordic noir murder series,
sure,
you know, on BritBox or something all the time. So yeah, that's what we've been up to.
Well, I can add one to that, because there's a new season of a show that my wife and I really enjoy. Not on Netflix. They've done several past seasons on Netflix, but this is just on their website. And so that's a Meat Eater. Which I know I've talked about in the past. It's Steve Rinella's show, kind of about the ethics of hunting and a variety of hunting around the world. It's a reality show, like an actual reality show. And so it's season 11 is back. By now, when you're listening to this, there'll be 2 or 3 episodes. I watched the first one and just really enjoyed it. It's a nice bit of outsideness, probably not unlike Alone. I do remember watching Alone, but I feel like I watched a bunch of it one day when I was, like, very ill, or a week when I was, like, very ill. And just kind of, like, was in and out the whole time. And I'm not saying, I don't know that it's a calm show, but it has a certain calmness to it. There's a kind of a background noise of dread for some of these people who like hurt themselves or really devote a lot of time to an environment where they think their home will work and then it doesn't for whatever reason. They kind of start off at base ground again, which is tough. But the show, when it works, when you really see somebody like come into their element and kind of seem like, oh, they may never need to leave. Like if we give this person enough time, or like if you gave them two or three more tools, they'd go full Prenicky. They'd invite you in for flapjacks by the time the plane showed up in a few months.
Yeah. And it's interesting to see going from season eight, we watched like the first episode of season one, and clearly by season eight, they had honed their style of guest or participant. And the people in the later seasons clearly are more adept at all these different tasks. But even among those people in season eight, really accomplished outdoors people, it's interesting to watch over the course of the season and the episodes to see where they start to break down, what small decision was the wrong one. There's a real cerebral aspect to it that we enjoyed. So yeah, really, really fun. So good time of year to kind of get into that stuff too. It's the weather's turning a bit foul here. And so we've been enjoying that.
Yeah, that's great. Super fun. Well, hey, you want to get into some wrist check then?
Yeah. What have you got on? What'd you bring to New York?
I brought a handful of stuff, but the main thing is because we're gonna be shooting the video for it. I'm still working my way through like the outline for the big story about the Pelagos 39.
Oh, sure.
Just when wearing it, it's on the bracelet. It's kind of become like one of my favorite modern watches I've ever come across.
Yeah.
I just really like it.
Yeah.
It's not perfect. We talked about it on a past episode. Its flaws are not slowing down its appeal for me.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, they're almost not tangible after a certain point, but That'll be covered more accurately in the review, but it's the Pelagos 39. I got some watches in just before I left for this trip, but I want to turn that story into like an entire episode.
Yeah.
So I don't want to give away necessarily that. I've kept it off Instagram so far. I'm just trying to line up the details for that. So stay tuned in the future for what I hope to be a very interesting story about some watches that I haven't had in some time. But Jason, what have you got in?
Yeah, big surprise. New watch. It arrived yesterday. This is the Seiko 5, the Rowing Blazers limited edition.
I've seen two of those around the Hodinkee office already. They're neat.
Yeah, so I picked up the orange dial version, which I immediately kind of caught my fancy when I saw pictures of it. It's a really vibrant orange, and kind of the backstory of this is this company, Rowing Blazers, that's kind of a lifestyle company that does some, you know, kind of clothing inspired by kind of preppy rowing clubs of the past, which I don't connect with at all, by the way. The owner of that company, Jack Carlson, has this vintage Seiko 5 from, I believe, the 60s or 70s with the same dial, same markers, et cetera, and an orange dial. And so he wanted to recreate that along with a few other dial types. And so he hooked up with an old friend, Eric Wind, who now runs Wind Vintage, used to be a kind of OG Hodinkee guy. I knew him back in the day, and he worked with them to kind of make this happen with Seiko. And I'm really pleasantly surprised with this watch. Like I said, I have no connection with Rowing Blazers. I could completely do without the Rowing Blazers logo on the bottom of the dial. But when I look at it, my eyesight's not good enough anyway. It looks like it might just say automatic 100-meter water resistant for all I care. You know, it's like just small black text at the bottom of the dial. But I just love the way it sits on the wrist, and it's fun to have an affordable new Seiko again. I know you've had an experience with the GMT,
the SSK, yeah,
Seiko 5, the SSK, and I got a chance to handle yours, and kind of like I was like, this is impressive. You know, I've been kind of pulling out my old SKX lately, and this obviously wears the same. I mean, it's got the 4 o'clock crown, the kind of the same case shape, but no dive bezel. And then I'm pretty impressed with this bracelet. I imagine it's the same bracelet that's on your SSK or something similar. It's a, you know, three link kind of oyster style with a fold over clasp.
Could be that different. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
Definitely the same as what I have in like my SARB, you know, baby alpinist.
Yeah. Super comfy, good loom, fun watch.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I saw the black one last night on the wrist of a Hodinkee staffer.
Yeah.
And I think they're very cool. You know, this is the second Rowing Blazers Seiko collab. They did ones based more on the SKX platform. I mean, it's the Seiko 5 that looks like the SKX, but with a dive bezel and that sort of thing. And they were crazy popular.
Yeah.
And I think they did the right thing by offering, I think it's four versions. I think the last one, there were less than that. And looks like they sold out immediately. Like, a big congrats to the Rowing Blazers guys. I've crossed paths with them in New York in the past. And then Eric Wynn's an absolute sweetheart. I mean, he's always been super supportive and great, and he's obviously a deep watch nerd and a fantastic vintage dealer. So yeah, I think it's nice when nice people put together something that is cool and you want to wear it.
Yeah, right.
Very cool. Well, speaking of wearing it, you want to get into some straps?
Yeah. I mean, we kind of debated what to talk about today, and
yeah.
You know, I mentioned straps, and we've done episodes about straps, but I'm surprised that it's been such a long time. I think the last one was what, episode 79?
Episode 79 was the last time we did a strap specific episode, and I think since then, straps obviously come up every episode, every couple episodes, but we haven't really done like a state of the strap scenario for us for 2022. So that'll be episode 215. Straps 2, call it what you like. But yeah, we've got a bunch of categories here. Jason, you figure the normal place to start here would be with NATOs?
Yeah, I mean, it's our namesake, and you know, probably our favorite style of strap. And where's the best place to kick off with? Probably Ute, or what formerly known as Toxic.
Uta, Toxic, Ute. Yeah, I mean, you can get a gray one from us, but it'll cost you. It's one of the more expensive NATOs on the list if you're really buying an annual supporter plan just for a NATO. The cool thing is Hodinkee often has stock of several other iterations, which on their site they call the Sumba or the Sambolo. And the Sambolo is the same material as a normal Uta NATO, but it's a two-piece design. So it's not a real NATO, but it if you really don't like having the material under your watch and you're not concerned about the spring bar safety of a NATO strap, then that's a great option. And they range between $24 and $35, which, like, we have a bunch of other NATOs on this list. The one that I have on all my watches, and is the reason that I don't actually have a ton of picks necessarily in every other element of this kind of chat,
yeah,
is because I really just like Uta's NATOs. I have obviously several grays. I have tan and green, which I like a lot. But hey, casual guy, I like NATOs. We like NATOs. And that's the one that I would point to immediately. Obviously, we have a vested interest in that product as well, as we like it enough to have made it our sort of official NATO. But there's also a lot of other good options, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm a bit of kind of a promiscuous NATO wearer. I go all over the place. I've got quite a few what I would call favorites. One that I wear a lot is the Matte Supreme from Crown and Buckle.
Really nice.
Really cool strap. It has this, as the name might suggest, it's a matte strap, so it's not like a shiny seatbelt style. In fact, it has kind of a woven, almost Perlon-esque look from a distance, and it's soft, but it's like has enough body to it that it wears well. The buckle's good.
Totally.
They've got a number of different, you know, great colors. They've got one called, I believe it's called Grege. So it's kind of a gray beige mix. They have all sorts of cool colors. They've got sort of this vanilla, I'm not sure of their exact name for it, but almost like a custard, sort of a tan color. I've got one of those, right. And I just move those from watch to watch. I really like those. And then I also like the kind of the stiffer, I think we talked about this just a couple of episodes ago, so I don't have to go into a lot of detail, but the formerly known as cheapest NATO straps, ribbed straps are right. Great. They're quite stiff. So when you get them, you got to break them in and wear them a bit, but they stand up well when they're wet. Cheapest NATO straps has now had to rebrand to CNS and watch bands, which is unfortunate, but still the same company run by Sophie over in Sweden, and great customer service, incredible pricing. So I like their ribbed straps.
Yeah, great pricing.
Also in the ribbed category is the strap that came with my Tornik Rayville TR660. They call it Nitex, and they sell it separately, and it's a fantastic strap. So it's a one-piece strap. It's actually not a, you know, true NATO with the extra piece
underkeeper. Yeah.
It has this, like, it's ribbed, but it's soft, and it has this really nice kind of body to it. It's just the right length. It's got a beefy buckle, and it just looks really good on the watch. And it came with actually two versions of the strap that, and then you can buy them separately. And it's one of my favorites as well. I move that from watch to watch, and I highly recommend that one if you can pick that one up separately.
And that one, I'm looking at their website. So yeah, you can buy them separately in black or khaki. Is it 20 mil? It doesn't say on their website.
Oh, it doesn't say. Yeah, it's 20 mil. Yeah. I guess because their watches come with a kind of 20 mil
that makes sense
spacing. Yeah. And so that's
that looks
all
great.
But yeah, it's a good one.
probably going to need the green one.
Yeah, it's, it's very good. It's very, very good.
Says the guy who has like a 10 strap order from CNS currently in the mail. yeah, the strap thing.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a sickness. And crown and buckle, that's not even like their only option, because we've talked about the chevron in the past.
Yeah.
Which I have a couple of these, and I think I was hot for them for a while. But if you're not really a NATO guy or you want a strap that's a lot, basically their version of the really excellent fabric strap from Tudor.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same sort of format. It's not made at the same place. The Tudor ones are made in France at the special company, et cetera, et cetera. These are a little bit more consumer grade,
yeah.
Normal, accessible, well-priced, that sort of thing. But it does give you that ability to change the actual length of the strap.
Hmm.
With an internal, like with a looping sort of adjustment, like a cinching adjustment,
right?
Which is pretty handy. I do like those quite a bit. And then I don't know if I've actually tried any other purlons, but the crown and buckle purlons are great. And they're not technically a NATO, but they are a single pass style strap.
Yeah.
So I put them in this part of the list.
Yeah,
I have a handful of those. Halios back in the day kind of turned me on to the existence of the purlon, and I think I'd only seen people wear them on like Abercrombie Seafarers and stuff like that, and kind of rolled my eyes at.
Right,
it's kind of silly looking or whatever.
Yeah.
And then once they're on your wrist, like they're killer, like infinitely adjustable, basically really light. And on the right watch, a watch that's not too bulky, you got to try purlon for sure.
Yeah, my one concern with the chevron, the Tudor ones, and purlon is they've always been slightly too short for me. I don't have huge wrists, but and I've lost weight, so maybe I should try them again because my wrists have shrunk a little bit. But I've always found them just slightly too short, even at their longest setting. So I wish someone made a longer one. So if anyone knows of it, like a slightly longer version of that style strap, let me know because I'd love to try it.
Yeah. And then the other one that we like and we've talked about a ton, I debated whether it goes here or in rubber straps.
Yeah.
So I put it here just because, again, it's a single pass strap, is the Zulu Diver 328. It's a Bonetto Centorini product, but I've bought mine in the past from Watch Gecko, and that'll be the link in the show notes. We're not affiliated with them. They do nice business. I've bought lots of straps from them in the past. It's a great strap. Like if you want a rubber NATO, and in the summer I really do enjoy them on certain watches, mm-hmm. it's worth every penny. They're a little bit on the expensive side, especially compared to like a CNS or even an UTA at $25. Like these will cost you more once you get them in.
Yeah, I remember liking, I had one of them or a couple of them, and somehow mysteriously they've disappeared, and I really need to get a different one. I remember we talked about taking off that extra piece and how it fits a little better. Good summer option for sure. There's another one. I mean, I've talked about Haviston in the past, and Haviston is just, they just make great products. I mean, it's a UK-based company. They make everything from some beautiful kind of rubber coasters with watch dials. They do packs of cards. But the Haviston straps, I think it's kind of where he started, are really a superior product. They're a thick, soft NATO. I'm talking specifically about their service strap. And I guess my only, if you can even call it a quibble, it's more of just an aesthetic taste, is most of them are striped or have some kind of a pattern to them, mm-hmm. which isn't always my thing. I mean, they have a few more muted ones or subtle ones that work, but just in terms of the quality of them, the buckles are, I would almost say it's the best buckle on a NATO strap, and the packaging is okay. Always good. The pricing isn't too bad. So yeah, check out Haviston as well. And then also from the UK is from our friends at CWC. It's kind of a underreported or unsung strap. This is their Stretch NATO. This strap is incredibly comfortable. It has just the right amount of elastic to it, almost like what you get on like an Erica's. I know we're going to talk about that shortly here, but it's a NATO strap. And like if you're between holes mm-hmm. on a NATO, like you can pick the slightly smaller one and it just kind of stretches to your wrist without being like tight and uncomfortable. Really, really great pick from CWC.
Nice. Yeah. I've seen these before, and actually not unlike the Haviston and not unlike the Erica's, I'm not much for the stripe.
Oh yeah.
I would actually go as far as say like it's a deal breaker for me.
Yeah.
I have an Erica's in gray, and I think they are probably the most comfortable strap I've ever come across, especially once you figure out how you're actually supposed to wear them. They're a closed loop that you slide over your hand,
mm-hmm.
and then you adjust the length of that. Sorry, I pulled my mic away because I was miming that. And then you adjust the length of the strap with a little slider, and then it hooks in. And basically, not only can you lightly adjust it just by pulling on that slider while it's on your wrist, but then when you add in the elastic, which is the element of this NATO stretch from CWC, it's just so comfortable. And I have a gray one with an orange stripe that works really well on the SPB and on the the Doxa,
yeah,
the Sea Rambler. But other than that, I do wish that I could just go on the site and buy like a gray one,
right?
A dark gray.
Yeah, yeah.
She offers so many different colorways. If you dig a stripe, I think you need to have an Erica's strap. And the other thing I'll say is, and Jason, maybe you're the same. I've tried to buy like the Erica stuff starts around 80 euros,
mm-hmm.
which is not a cheap strap, but it's like a nice small business. And she's lovely. We've met her in the past, and I have tried to find like what the budget version of this is.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's the same type of strap layout, but in a cheaper fabric with worse buckles or hardware or whatever, just out of interest.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a few of those coming from CNS, so maybe this will check the box. But the ones I bought in the past aren't even the same. Like, they look identical, but they don't do that fit and cinch sort of thing that makes it, like, perfect on your wrist.
Right.
So I would say, like, be careful that what you're getting, you actually get what we just talked about. And it might, I would suggest trying an Erica's. But look at the pictures, watch the video on Erica's on like how to put it on and size it and that kind of thing. And you'll get an understanding for what I mean. But yeah, I'm not a huge stripe guy. I've got a lot of NATOs with stripes.
Yeah.
The Bond one I tried to get into back when I was wearing my Seamaster a bunch. And I know that's a little sacrilege because, of course, in the Bond one where he had the Bond stripe NATO, he, of course, was also wearing a Rolex and it was the wrong size and all this kind of fun stuff. But I remember giving it a try. And at the time, maybe it aligned a little bit more with my taste. But I feel like I've become even more casual, where it's like it's gray, green, or tan,
yeah,
pretty much,
yeah,
for me, and I don't need the stripe, and that held me back from a bunch of the CNS stuff as well, because the gray, the green, the tans without a stripe were all purchased,
yeah.
So I'm trying to remember what I bought, but I'm not sure I got like exactly the. I'll have to keep watching for when they restock, but yeah, there's definitely some good options in that, and I think that pretty much rounds out the non. Oh, we've got the Triple Aught Design Quantum on there, of course, which, Jason, you've talked about in the past, and I've only seen in person once or twice.
Yeah, definitely a splurge pick, and every time I post a picture of it, people are like, what? That is more expensive than my Seiko. And it's like, yes, I know.
Sure.
But, you know, it's definitely on the high end, but yeah, worth mentioning.
I definitely think it's worth mentioning. And then if you look at, like, compare that to what you pay for an Omega NATO,
sure,
which is a perfectly fine NATO, but it's hundreds of dollars also.
Right.
And then look at what you might pay for, I don't know, let's take it, like, if you take a guess what Blancpain wants for the NATO for a 50 fathoms,
yeah,
bathyscaphe, you know, ceramic,
true,
right? Which came with a beautiful NATO and a really nice sailcloth strap with the special hardware, the rest of it all, you know, in the same finish. That's got to be,
yeah,
I don't want to say a grand, but it's probably close, right? Like,
yeah,
why wouldn't it be? It's a $28,000 watch or whatever.
Right, true.
So I think that depending on what watch you're putting it on and if you just want one NATO, like if I look at my box of NATOs, I've got more in a bunch of straps that I don't wear, a bunch of $10 straps that I don't wear, than one $250 strap.
Yeah.
It's just a question of what you need from the strap. Me, about $25.
Right.
Or let's call it $100 if you want to support TGN for a year. But I don't think that the Quantum is like out of line. It's just, it's the premium option for something that's generally quite inexpensive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Beyond that, we can do, you want to do leather NATOs or do you want to do that in leather, which we could just get to?
Good segue. Why don't you do the leather NATO and then we'll slide into leather.
So I have two leather NATOs that I like. The first is the Tan Kangaroo single piece from Hodinkee.
Mm, good one.
So this is $90. It's good enough that I've not bothered buying any others.
Yeah, Kangaroo is amazing, isn't it? It's like a little stretch to it, super durable.
Yeah, it defies being leather. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It takes sweat really well. I always figured, like, because it's so thin, mm-hmm, like thinner than a fabric NATO.
Right.
And you put it on and you think, like, well, this looks incredible. Really kind of is a little bit less casual than a nylon. And it works on a dressier watch. It works on a vintage watch really well. They're super thin, so it's easy to slide in and not scratch the leather trying to draw it through the spring bar gap.
Mm-hmm.
And I always just kind of figured, like, oh, I'll sweat in this a few times. It'll get enough sunlight that it'll just fall apart, disintegrate. The stuff's indestructible.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, these are great straps. And like I said, they're good enough that, like, I've never gone and thought, oh, I need another.
Right.
And I will say, apart from my next mention here with David Lane Designs, pretty much all my leather's Hodinkee at this point.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's the option of a discount if I want to deal with still sending it over the border and paying the taxes and the rest of it. But for me, like, I don't know, like, Jason, I'm curious to see where you would go with leather, because I feel like once I have a certain ones and they're of a certain quality that they last, I don't think about leather straps anymore. I have a couple in brown, I have a couple in green, I have a couple in gray. and I just kind of move them around from one watch to another when I feel like it.
Yeah.
I also feel like I don't put that much wear and tear on my leather straps because I wear NATOs like 8 out of 10 times. But I would say that the other one to mention is David Lane Designs, which is a kind of mom and pop shop. One guy who I've met in Rochester, New York, he made both Jason and I a gray, like suede leather NATO. And on a heavy enough watch, like on the Aquastar,
yeah,
it's so good.
Yeah,
it's beautiful. Yeah. It really suits the design. If you're looking for like a guy to make you a custom strap, at least have David Lane Designs on your list. He's a really sweet guy. I hope still a TGN listener, and the straps are great. I've seen the workshop. I shot it because he supplied some special straps with Hodinkee, so we did a little story for the shop a while back, and I got to go visit him, and just really really nice stuff.
Yeah, I guess if we're moving into leather, I mean, I would have to say that most of my leather straps are Hodinkee straps as well. And then when I was kind of working with this guy locally here who is in the leather strap business and actually is a supplier to the Hodinkee shop, he was working with him on the kind of the concept for that Heaton Bund strap that the Hodinkee mm-hmm. shop sells. And, you know, I've been fortunate enough to be chums with him, and he's passed a number of kind of prototype straps over to me. So I wear a lot of them, but a lot of them are kind of adjacent to the Hodinkee shop ones.
Sure.
But in addition to those, I would say there are a couple of other kind of small strap makers that I'm a fan of. And one that I've talked about before is my friend Myron, who's at Rover Haven. He's over in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Great straps. Great straps. Yeah.
Yeah. He works almost exclusively with Shell, Cordovan, Horween stuff. Super durable leather. I mean, if you're going to go with leather that you want to wear like all the time, you can go with Horween leather, the Shell Cordovan, and it'll just never wear out. I mean, like you can wear it in the water, you can sweat mm-hmm. in it, you can do whatever. In fact, I have a custom 24 millimeter Shell NATO that I got that I wore on my old Citizen Aqualand, and I actually wore it that way to the Maldives and went diving with it.
Oh man, maybe I should see if he'll make me one for my Aqualand.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And they're pretty thin and they're super durable and they just look great. So
yeah, I have at least one of his straps and they're really nicely made.
Yeah, he'll do a Bund for you. It's all custom stuff and he's got a day job that keeps him busy. So you know, there's a bit of a wait and he's not, you know, super kind of responsive. It's not his main business, but he does a really nice job and he's a real watch nerd. He's a Land Rover guy. So yeah, good one to hit up. And then another one is Alex at Marshmade Leather, another kind of small shop guy who's also got a day job. He makes straps on the side. Alex came and visited us at our booth in Chicago at Windup. Hey, Alex, I hope you're listening. He does a nice job with straps and other leather goods. If you're into like kind of leather bracelets, I had him make me like a double wrap leather bracelet, and he does wallets and things like that. So he's another good one. And then the Strap Tailor, another small kind of one-man shop over in the UK who does a really nice job. I also had him make I really wanted like a canvas and leather strap that's like leather lined with canvas on top. And it's a beautiful strap. I don't wear it enough. In fact, I should put it on something. Maybe I'll put it on this vintage Seiko 6105. I think it would look great on that. But it's fairly long lead time if you order something. And he also sells kind of very unique rubber stuff and some NATOs and stuff, but his main thing is custom leather stuff. So check him out too. That's kind of where I land on leather. Yeah,
man, you've got me looking at the Marshmade Leather stuff and a couple good looking wallets in there too.
Yeah, yeah, nice guy too. I mean, we could probably talk. I mean, you could almost do a whole episode on leather, and I don't think it's really our wheelhouse. So actually, we're probably not doing it a proper service. But you and I just don't do a lot of leather. I do Bund straps in the winter, but then it's usually rubber or NATO the rest of the year. I'm sure we'll get a lot of comments from people with leather suggestions, and that's certainly welcome. We'd love to hear about more leather stuff in the comments on the post here, because I remember when I was just getting into watches and kind of getting on the forums, it was such a big deal, like aftermarket leather, and everyone was talking about
custom straps
especially for like Panerai and things like that. So
Oh yeah, so get a good Benares in, and then you got to get your Toshi order in.
Oh,
and
yeah,
3 months
yeah.
later, it shows up. Man, I got a couple of those still, and that was such an exciting time to be into watches. So
yeah,
if that's the mode that you're in, and maybe that's the mode I need to be in, but for the Aqualand because it's got the big lugs.
Right, right, yeah,
super fun. And then the other thing I'd say is if you have a recommendation, the Hodinkee shop and a lot of shops basically only go down to 16 millimeters.
Mm.
I have a watch now that I'm not prepared to talk about just yet. Again, there's a grander story that I'm working on about it, but it's 14.
Oh, wow.
If you have a favorite 14 millimeter lug, or if you just think, hey, my friend made me one for my old, you know, watch or whatever, maybe drop it in the comments. Just let me know. Obviously, we've covered a few people who can make custom ones, but I'm always interested, especially if it's something where it already exists and I could just order it and not wait a lot longer, because I've waited a long time to put this specific watch on my wrist and it came back, you know, from some work and there's no... I don't have a strap for it. And I thought in my mind I had a 14 somewhere. Nothing even close. I might
tiny.
Have a 16.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's really small. It's a tiny watch. If you've got an idea for that, I would appreciate it. Any tips in the comments on thegreynato.com. In the Substack, how about some metal bracelets? Because there's a few that we like, although typically you use the one the watch came with sometimes, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a ton to add for metal. I really have only tried a couple of aftermarket ones because I'm kind of picky about metal bands, and usually the one that comes on a watch is pretty good. I think you have a couple of good picks. I would just kind of quickly throw mine in. I think a couple of the better ones that are out there these days are Forstner, and I was really into Forstner bands when they first came out. They were doing the mm-hmm. Comfit, which is kind of the mimic of the old JB Champion bands that came on the Speedmasters back in the Apollo days of the 60s. And I've got one of those, and it's really, really quite nice. It's really well made. It's definitely an acquired yeah. taste when it comes to the style. But since then, Forstner's really expanded their offerings, and they do a lot of kind of Speedmaster style flat link and kind of three link bracelets. They do like a Bond clip style, if you're kind of into that old military bracelet style.
Yeah, and they're super popular.
Good choice, and good packaging, good customer service, high quality fit and finish. So highly recommend them. And then the other one I'll mention is Uncle Straps, which used to be called Uncle Seiko, but since he does bracelets for a number of different watches, he does a pretty brisk business in Tudor bracelets as well. If you want like an aftermarket Jubilee for like a Black Bay or something, he does some nice work. And I came across his stuff when I was trying to fit an old 1171 steel bracelet to my white dialed Seamaster 300.
Oh, right.
And I had the bracelet, but the end links that obviously came with that were kind of the hollow, you know, rattly end links for like an old Speedmaster. And so I bought one of his bracelets and I just used the end links from it. But the bracelet itself is great. So if you're looking for good aftermarket bracelet for a Tudor or any number of Seiko styles or some other stuff, Omega, et cetera, check out Uncle Straps. Mm-hmm. Good stuff.
They have a ton of stuff. They kind of spread this whole episode as far as straps, and they have a great reputation. I've seen a couple of the Seiko style rubber
right
ones in person, and they're really nice. Yeah. So we'll get to rubber in just a moment. Mine, if you listen to the show commonly, I'm not a huge bracelet guy, but I do love a mesh bracelet, especially on a vintagey sort of dive watch. So that Heimdallr mesh is my favorite I've come across yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's $39. I think they make a titanium version, right, Jason?
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, so you can get a steel or titanium, depending on what you got. It's basically styled after the mesh that came with the No Time to Die, or can come with the No Time to Die Seamaster. I've put that on a handful of different watches for $40. I don't really know what you say. Like, it's a nice metal bracelet. Like, it's a nice strap. The price is just right. You can make it fit pretty well. And then, I've had some pretty good experiences, like, with a couple of, like, the Amazon like $15 mesh bracelets. I'll try and find whichever one I actually have and put it in the show notes, but they're unremarkable except that they're $15 and a mesh bracelet. That's all.
Right.
Low stakes.
Yeah.
And then finally, and I definitely talked about it before, I think it's hilarious to put my Explorer on a Jubilee, but I'm not going to spend real Jubilee money for something I wear 2-3 times a year.
Yeah.
So I bought a Hadley Roma MB4216 from Holbens. No affiliation, it's not an ad, etc. I paid normal money for it. It's $60. I think that pretty much rounds out metal. You can tell that we like NATOs.
Yeah, right.
So we can jump into rubber. the big ones are stuff we talk about a lot. Tropic makes, I would say, probably the best rubber strap you could just buy and throw on a watch, especially if it's a vintage inspired sort of watch. I don't love it when they're like really big straps, like 22. They look better on 18 and 20, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree.
It just kind of suits it better. Mm-hmm. Isofrane, on the other hand, makes a lot more sense on a big one. So I think that they're great, especially if you have, there's enough watch for the thickness of the isofrane.
Definitely, because they don't taper at all. And so they look kind of funny if they're on kind of a smaller watch, like a 20. Like, I would say go with, if you've got like a watch with 22 or 24 millimeter lugs, like isofrane's the way to go, like a big dive watch. If you've got 20 or 18, Tropic's the way to go, because it has that taper. It's a little thinner.
Absolutely agree.
And the Tropic ones, they just wrap around the wrist so nicely. They're just so soft and perfect length. And yeah, they're great.
And they're like surprisingly good when they're a little bit wet or you're sweaty. The summer stuff, they like deal with sand nicely. And they maintain that vintage appeal. Like if you buy a vintage inspired dive watch.
Yeah.
And then just put it on a normal kind of tactical style rubber. Mm-hmm. Doesn't always work, right?
Right.
Like these are incredibly cool straps for Doxas.
Yeah, yeah.
An SPB 143. This is where I would lean Tropic immediately. And then if you look on the other side, like for, let's say, the Skirfa, maybe, Pelagos comes with a great rubber to begin with, so what are you bothering with there? But I really like the Hirsch Pure, but they're really hard to find. I'll try and find one and put it in the show notes. I don't know if Hirsch makes them anymore, but they are like the most basic, simple design. No venting, no holes, no patterning. It's a strip of rubber and a buckle, but it's like nice rubber. And I've had mine for a really long time and worn it on a ton of different watches. And it's just thin and works. And I really, really like it. No complaints there. And then the other one I had, and Jason, I think you told me it's an Uta strap, but it's the black rubber that came with my Skirfa.
Yeah.
Aside from being a little long for my wrist, it's really good.
It is. It's got like those slots instead of holes. It's got kind of a wide tang on the buckle and kind of a squared off end, just the right thickness. Those are cool. I have a couple of those. I have the blue one that came with my MS-21 Skirfa, and then I remember when I was working with, you know, her, I'd written to Terry at Ute and you know, was asking him about it. And then I bought I think I have a brown one from him and
cool and
a different color as well. So I'm not sure where else those are available anymore, but really, really nice, nice rubber straps. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe you can buy them through Skirfa. I don't know.
Oh yeah. Good point. Yep. I bet you can. And then the other one I'll mention is Zealand, which I believe the Hodinkee shop is selling now, but you can buy it directly from Zealand with an E on the end. This is that kind of soft FKM style rubber. They make them specific to certain watches. So actually I bought a white one for the Seamaster. Looks fantastic. Super comfy, really nice, kind of fitted end style rubber strap. Really pleased with that one as well. So
nice. Yeah. They look great. And then that would bring us to what I think is probably the nicest rubber strap I've ever bought or used. And that's the Everest. Mm-hmm. I have a blue one. That's like fitted for my Explorer 2. If you have, they probably make far more than back when I got that blue one.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're kind of known for making really nice rubber straps that fit Rolex products.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, are they a bit on the expensive side? I guess if you're talking about comparing it to a $20 or $30 rubber, but kind of like with the triple aught design, you can't buy an Oyster Flex.
Right.
I don't even know what it would cost if you could, right? But like a good rubber strap does cost from an OEM several hundred dollars, and these don't cost that much.
Yeah.
But they do Rolex, Tudor, Panerai, and then they have options for what they call any watch. And I've been pretty interested lately to pick up one of these universal options. So it'd be the same material, but they're only doing it in black. So if they expand, if I could get one of these any watch versions, which kind of has a little bit of an Omega, the previous Omega or Planet Ocean vibe.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like a central channel. If they did this in gray, you know, sorry to be so basic, but black rubber is as close as I get to wearing a black strap, but I have a couple I really like that Hirsch Pure, but I could see these being like a really nice match for an already really nice watch, and I think that's where they make sense.
Yeah, good call. And I guess we did mention Uncle under metal, but Uncle straps make some great kind of Seiko style. In fact, has actually recreated a number of the old kind of classic Seiko rubber straps. And I think Seiko, as far as OEM rubber, Omega makes great rubber straps, but Seiko has, mm-hmm. they were kind of the king for a long time. And cool to see Uncle recreate some of those old ones.
Yeah, the G381 with the flat vent
yeah,
is cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I like those. I've never had the wrist, or maybe my wrist is too bony for the Z22s, like what came with an SKX.
Yeah, yeah.
But some of these, yeah, the Uncle Seiko stuff is worth checking out as well. Man, there's some great rubber. At any price point, essentially. Because you can also, like, if you really love your watch, the brand might make a rubber strap, like mm-hmm. a Breitling or that sort of thing. And those are great. Like, a Hershey Breitling is pretty rad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So true.
All right. Let's close it out with others. So, sailcloth, canvas, that sort of thing. Yeah. Where do you feel? Like, obviously, we've talked a ton about Artem.
Yeah, Artem sailcloth. You know, I kind of was turned on to Artem when I was looking for a longer version of the sailcloth to go on my my Blanc Pond to kind of mimic the one that came with it. And ordered one, and it's at least the equal of the one that came on the Blanc Pond. Sorry about that, Blanc Pond, but it is a very nice sailcloth strap.
Yeah.
Haviston makes great canvas straps. I really like canvas straps. I mean, they're
me too.
You know, not great for kind of wet, you know, stuff like sweat or swimming, but like you can like hike in it, wear it, you know, 90% of the time. It's great alternative to leather. And again, Haviston with their, what they call it, the canvas series, makes a really nice canvas, kind of a pull-through style that I've got on my 6105 right now, kind of in an olive color. Oh, that's nice. Great. And then Barton. I mean, we haven't talked about Barton bands, but Barton makes a wide variety of straps. They do rubber. They do kind of a composite. I was chatting with my designer friend, Paul, who worked on my Depth Charge book cover, and he's a bit of a watch nerd, TGN listener. And he turned me on to kind of this interesting composite sort of canvas rubber composite strap that he's going to maybe fit on a Grand Seiko, kind of a sportier watch. Those are really cool. The only quibble I have with Barton is I'm not a huge fan of quick release spring bars, you know, the kind with the little thumb yep. tab on the back. I if I have a watch that has spring bars, like then I have this conundrum of like, okay, now I got to find some place to put these like little extra spring bars I have. And sure. Plus I always have this paranoia that I'm going to, you know, accidentally release my strap on my wrist. It's never happened, but I would love if Barton made these straps without the quick release, but you know, a lot of people like them and the straps themselves are great and they're really affordable.
Yeah. And I mean, you could probably also just snip the little trigger and pull them out, right?
that's what Paul said. Yeah.
Yeah. But I like these quite a bit. I also really like quick change straps. I have a dumb little jar on my desk full of spring bars that I have to measure every time I want to use them.
Yeah, yeah.
But I dig these. I've seen these in person. They're nicely made for sure. The other one that I wear a ton, it's actually on my Skirfa as we talk, is the crown and buckle option, which is the Phalanx, Phalanx. And it's just a really nice, like I've had mine for a long time. I think it was one of the stock straps that came with my original Halios C4th, the 12-hour bezel pastel.
Oh.
It's like a green, yeah, sort of light denim-y sort of green canvas that I wear a lot. I have a tan version that I don't know who it's from, and I'm not home to be able to flip it over and see if it's embossed.
Yeah.
But I think it might also be a crown and buckle or like a Hirsch, that sort of thing, like a bigger, normal sort of strap supplier that's been around for a while. Hadley Roma, maybe. But those are the two that I like. The green and the tan kind of really do the whole thing. I have a gray version of the crown and buckle as well. So, I think there's a lot of good options. If you want the premium, go with the Artem and then give it a moment to break in. Really lovely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool stuff. Lots of straps.
Lots of straps. We've scratched the surface, though. I mean, this is such a huge category, and I think we were overdue, and we would have to do one a month in order to hit all these people. And I'm sure we'll just get so many comments with like, you forgot about so and so or whatever. And
yeah, please let us know.
Yeah, guilty as charged. Yeah,
yeah, and I'm sure we'll have a straps channel in Slack starting probably in the next, we'll call it 2 weeks.
Yeah, good point.
I'm just been too busy, if I'm honest, running around to put the final touches on how that invite will work and make sure that people come in and we'll be able to be part of it. But I think a straps channel makes a lot of sense for the Slack. So if you want to get in on the Slack, we talked about this previously, but that's part of the new plan for the coming year, the big addition to those who decide to pay for the Grenado. Either at the $5 a month or the $100 a year, which is the strap, but either one will now also include Slack access. And I would imagine that if you're listening to this and it's anytime after the day it comes out, the comments are going to be full of really good strap options. There's just like, we've never been more spoiled for choice.
Yeah.
Like I remember back in the day, there was a go-to for the big Panerai style strap. There's a go-to for rubber. Now there's like 10, 15, 20 right. go-tos. You can just do really well.
Yeah. Good one. All right. We should wrap this up with some final notes. Yeah. What have you got this week?
Mine's actually my annual announcement that Top Gear is back. the show's back on. I always like to tell people that it's out. The first episode I really, really liked, and it included one, in my opinion, what's one of the best films they've done in quite some time. I genuinely believe that I saw some stuff in this video I've never seen in a car before.
Hmm.
So it's the Rimac Navara. Chris Harris is driving it, and I'll put a reaction video, a sort of like talking about the film video that they put on the Top Gear YouTube. That'll be the link in the show notes. But whatever you got to do, whether it's through iPlayer or whatever, to check this episode out if you're into cars, the hosts, I think, have really come a long way. The show has its own feel, distinct from the original sort of pattern for the show, but still really fun. And then this Rimac is like a 1,900 horsepower electric car.
Wow.
They show a few things in this, whether it's a top speed run or a four-wheel drift, that like I don't think I've seen before, and it's so well captured. It really reminded me of like very early days of YouTube. Like the first time I saw a Top Gear thing was them driving a Lamborghini Murcielago and then chasing it in a Mitsubishi Lancer Evo. And I remember seeing like, oh my goodness, like how could that car be keeping up? Because it's in the rain and it's got four wheel drive. And I remain a giant Top Gear fan, and I'm thrilled that it's back. And the first episode was awesome and the kind of highlight reel for the season. I'm really pumped for it.
Nice. Yeah, cool. I like Chris Harris too. I mean, he's one of the great car guys. Yeah.
And how about you? What have you got?
Yeah, this came actually through one of our listeners named Marius, who sent it over. It's from the CBC, so Canadian Broadcast Corporation. Great Canadian radio history here. This is a kind of a interactive, unique presentation on the Radio 1 website called Paddle of the Century. And the subtitle says, 40 years ago, Don Starkel and his teenaged son set off from Winnipeg's Red River on a world record-setting canoe trip. And it's just a lovely long-form wow. piece with an audio component and some great kind of old okay. nostalgic photos and an interactive map that, as you scroll through this article, it takes you from their journey way up in Winnipeg, down through the U.S., down along the coast in Mexico, along the Gulf. I mean, this was an epic, epic trip that he and his sons did in a canoe, which is daunting to even think about. And it's just a really fantastic story. I mean, the story itself is good. The presentation's great. So check that out. We'll throw the link in the show notes as usual. And thanks to Marius for sending over that link. We appreciate the recommendations, as always. So thank you.
Man, I love a CBC reference. This is yeah. great. I'm yeah. scrolling through this now, and I did not pull this from Marius's email, so this is rad. I'm now very excited to probably get into this this evening. Super yeah. cool.
Cool.
Love it.
All right, that's the episode. So as always, thanks so much for listening. If you want to subscribe to the show notes, get into the comments for each episode, and for this one, please do. Or consider supporting the show directly, and maybe even grab a TGN signed NATO. Please visit thegraynato.com. Music throughout a siesta by Jazzar via the Free Music Archive.
And we leave you with this quote from Mark Twain, who said, "The difference between a miracle and a fact is exactly the difference between a mermaid and a seal."